am a terrorist. Words are my tools, my weapons. Through them, my thoughts vibrate around your synapses. They infiltrate your mind. They invade your soul. You are the victim of my speech, a casualty of my dangerous talk.
Welcome, talkers. This is Dangerous Talk, and I am your host, Stax. And this week, I have my brother here from the A-Team MySpace page. Mike?
Hey, everybody.
And first story that we have up to talk about is actually a year old. So I know what you're thinking. Why would I talk about a story that's a year old? But my brother Mike here brought this to my attention, and it is relevant in any time period, really, and especially relevant today. Do you have any thoughts on the story we're going to bring up before we bring it up?
Yes, this story pretty much defines irony. What you're about to see will blow your mind.
We're here in any case. So without further ado, I'm going to play the news clip that's a year old, and it's from, I think, Texas. So hold on.
First word of a possible book ban, and tonight some students are actually working to show support for the book. Eyewitness News reporter Deborah Wrigley joins us now live from Conroe. Deborah?
Harry Potter books have been the basis of complaints before, but now a book that's been on literary list for years is suddenly being thrust into a debate over what's appropriate reading material for students at this Conroe school.
All this stuff in it.
It was first published 53 years ago, Fahrenheit 451, said to be named for the temperature at which paper burns. In this world, no free thought was allowed, and books were destroyed by fire. 2 weeks ago at Caney Creek High School, a 10th grade English class was given Fahrenheit 451 as a reading assignment, but Diana Verm stopped after a few pages.
What do you find objectionable about it?
The cussing in it and then the burning of the Bible.
But the burning of a lot of other books, too.
Right.
She complained to her father she was given an alternate reading assignment, but her dad is pushing the issue. It is ironic in the true sense of the word that a fictional book on book banning is now the target of a request to remove it from school curriculum.
With God's name in vain being in there, that's number one reason. And then there's no reason for it being read.
The school has appointed a committee to review his objections, but students are now circulating a petition in support of the book. Friday, they say they'll be wearing T-shirts voicing their opinions.
This was probably one of the greatest eye-openers that we've had in our school curriculum. A lot of the people who did sign said that of all the books they had to read, this is the one they enjoyed. It really makes you, think about your situation.
And under the heading of timing is everything, it is coincidental perhaps that this book assignment was made during what we are told it was National Banned Book Week. A committee will investigate the basis of the parents' complaints. In Conroe, Deborah Wrigley, 13 Eyewitness News.
And we have just received a copy of the complaint filed against the school by Alton Verm. In the report, he listed each objected item line by line, complete with individual page numbers. Besides bad language and violence, Verm lists downgrading Christians and talking about our firemen as reasons this book should be banned. The school committee is expected to meet about the book, and we'll let you know what happens.
So there we go. Now, a lot of people say to me, not all Christians are like this. Why do we care? Why do atheists care, what people believe? And it's things like this, where some Christians want to ban this book, and nobody really raises an eyebrow to try and stop them, except the atheist community. I mean, there are a few Christian groups that will fight for free speech, but not so many. And I think that one of the things that we do is we fight for free speech for these books. And this isn't, while this story is a year old, it's not a new story, and it's not a story that's going away, because there are, Harry Potter was mentioned in the story, and now, of course, we have the Golden Compass.
Yeah, and I've never read The Golden Compass, but I know you have. But from what I understand, from their complaints, it's pretty retarded.
Well, the thing about The Golden Compass that I think is funny is that they say it's propagating atheism, and it's not, because the book in the book it deals with a world in which there actually is a God. You know, so it's not promoting atheism. That doesn't make sense. But the whole plot of the series, well, the reason why the Catholic group is against it is because they're worried if people see the movies, they're going to want the book.
Yeah, and that might cause them to question certain things, things they don't want questioned.
And the whole thing is, I think that they're afraid people are going to read the book. And their next step will probably be to put the Golden Compass series on a banned book list. You will probably see that the Catholic League will push for that banning, or what they'll do is when they'll have some library somewhere will have, you know, we'll read the Golden Compass to kids and or teens, and they'll, you know, Catholic League will protest that or something.
Yeah, and then they'll push Narnia on those poor, unsuspecting kids and say, C.S. Lewis, The Passion of the Christ, and forget this Pullman guy, move to C.S. Lewis.
Well, I think you made a point when I was talking to you about this earlier. You said that there were no real atheists that were protesting, you know, when The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe came out in movie theaters. In fact, I went and saw it, and, you know, most people are aware that there are Christian undertones to The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. C.S. Lewis is an apologist for Christianity and all that, but I didn't really find the movie very entertaining, nor did I find, well, when I was a kid, I kind of liked the books, but that was when I was a kid, you know. Now I look through that story, and I kind of am bored by it.
Yeah, and I think they're running scared a little bit, because while The Passion of the Christ was a huge success in the theaters, Narnia didn't do nearly as well as suspected. It was somewhat of a bomb by what they expected, and I don't think we may be seeing future Narnia series.
Oh, I think we will. I think even if it made nothing, which it didn't, it made a good chunk of money, but the thing is it costs a lot to make, so it didn't actually profit that much. They were kind of expecting it to do Lord of the Rings and Passion of the Christ put together, and it did probably about half Lord of the Rings did. But I think you'll see, even if it made no money whatsoever, you'd still see the continuing of the series, because it's not about making money. It's about propaganda.
Yeah, but it's been a while, and, you know, they wanted to do a Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, one every year thing. I think that was probably what they were after, and now they're possibly retooling things, thinking about how they can represent it in a way that will make money.
I'm not so sure about that. I think they're working already on the new Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movie. I think they're definitely working on that. I think they would love to find other avenues where they can exploit and target children, but which I think is a whole nother joke, and I've talked about that before, where you know, the Rational Response Squad did their blasphemy challenge, and they had a couple of teens and some younger kids, and they put advertisements up on teen websites, and all the news shows where they're targeting children. Meanwhile, you know, if you go to any bookstore and you go to the children's section, you'll find so many. You'll see Bill O'Reilly for Kids, which is hysterically funny and scary, too, I might add. And you'll see, you know, all kinds of Christian propaganda for kids. One of the big things, Noah's Ark. They're huge into Noah's Ark.
Yeah, and there is an animated movie on its way out, another Moses story, another Ten Commandments animated. I think Christian Slater is playing Moses.
Wow, and that surprised me almost, because Christian Slater is not a very religious guy.
Yeah, I think, you know, most of the secular world, or I mean, secular, not even just atheists, but most of the world generally thinks as the Moses story is not really like the Passion of the Christ religious, but just kind of this story of old, you know, this myth of everybody's, you know, Judeo-Christian values and whatever.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. That's how they get away with it, because most of the secular world is like, well, not secular world, but most of the general population is like, well, what's the harm? You know, it will teach kids morality. But really, it doesn't. Really, it's the antithesis of that.
Yeah, they're like, hey, it's Moses, we can do that, but I just hope that, like, the Passion of the Christ, they make all, like, the violence really, really graphic for all the little kiddies.
Well, let's go back to Moses. Like, people think, oh, Moses, you know, he was an agent of God, blah, 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 but, you know, I always quote the Numbers 31:17-18 verse where God ordered Moses to go into a village and murder and rape. And, you know, the whole reason why he did that in the context, because Christians always yell about context, is because the people in the village believed in the god Baal instead of the god Yahweh.
Yeah, and I think somebody was pointing out to me the other day, I was reading this somewhere, where when Jesus says, like, love thy neighbor, or when that general idea is passed, what they mean by neighbor is fellow believers, not those who believe in different gods or no gods at all.
It's actually different than that, even. It's actually more specific. It's that particular tribe, the tribe of Israel. And Gentiles or non-Hebrews were looked down upon. They were not considered. And there are many passages of the Bible that point to that. One is, you know, how God orders the treatment of slaves. You know, he said some slaves you have to treat differently than other slaves, and the slaves you have to treat better are the Israeli slaves. The other slaves you can treat a little bit worse.
But there are movies coming out that are critical of religion. One documentary that I saw recently was For the Bible Tells Me So.
So tell me about more about The Bible Tells Me So.
Yeah, it's about how the Bible looks at homosexuality. The whole homosexuality is an abomination clause in the Old Testament. And yeah, a couple of different stories about gay families and look at homosexuals in America today.
Now, does it focus mainly on the religious right, or does it talk about how religious, you know, liberal Christians talk about view homosexuality as well, or what's the deal?
Okay. Mostly on the fundamentalists, but there's a lot about the liberal Christians. Dick Geffard and his family are prominent in the film. They're one of the four or five families that are the focus of the film.
That's pretty cool. Now, you're more aware of some of these documentary movies than I am because you live in New York, which is a big independent movie hub. We're in Philly. We get some every once in a while, but not really. What other movies are out there that you know of that are kind of secularly based?
Okay, there's actually a documentary, I think, by the Super Size Me guy. What is his name? Morgan Spurlock, I believe?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a film, I think it's called What Would Jesus Buy?
Now, any idea when that's coming out, or is that out, and what's that about?
I think right now it's in select theaters across the country. Right now it's in New York at, I believe, one theater, and I guess that's also going to be moving across the country. These indie movies, especially documentaries, have a hard time getting into theaters, and so they count on ticket sales early on to push them into more theaters across the country.
Now, what's this movie, What Would Jesus Buy, about, as if I couldn't guess?
I think it looks at mostly, I think it's a Christmas movie, really. I think it's about consumerism around Christmas time, and I guess it relates that to Christianity and the principles that it claims to be about.
See, I have a feeling about this movie, and I haven't seen it yet, but I have a feeling that it's going to say that, you know, Jesus was all about giving away everything you own and not about buying stuff. But the thing is, I think it's going to want to talk about what it considers the true meaning of Christmas, which is not really the true meaning of Christmas, of course, because as I wrote in a column years ago, the true meaning of Christmas hasn't changed. It's always been consumerism.
And what is the true meaning of Christmas, Stax?
Well, like I was saying, it's consumerism. When the holiday originated, it wasn't Christmas, of course. It was Yule or the winter solstice. And the idea of a holiday at all at this time of year in which you give gifts originated when store owners had, you know, just finished their harvest and the winter months were coming and it was getting cold and they had to get rid of their stock before the winter came and their stock would go bad. So what they had to do was come up with some way to get rid of their stock and make a profit. So they introduced this holiday, the first Hallmark holiday, if you will, pre-Hallmark, to give gifts. So people went and bought the stuff out of the stores and gave them as gifts, and it was massive consumerism right from the start. So Christmas has always been consumerism, because Christmas, of course, stole Yule from the pagans and just turned it into a new holiday.
Hell, Santa Claus's clothes are all owned by Coca-Cola.
Yeah, I've seen that on the bottles, yeah, on the cans, too. And now we have Black Friday. So, you know, the holiday's still about consumerism. And we were out on Black Friday. We went to one of the malls, we went to Target Black Friday morning, and then we went to one of the malls here in the Northern Jersey, New York City area later that day. And it was quite busy, wasn't it?
Yes, and there's nothing better than the Jersey Mall.
Yeah. And, you know, they had some sales and stuff, and, you know, it's still about consumerism. And it brings me a little bit to politics, because, of course, I'm stumping for Dennis Kucinich's campaign, and he has this big movement right now where his campaign's asking people to donate to the campaign for Black Friday. So, obviously, Black Friday is over now, but hopefully more people will still donate to the campaign, because, you know, we're trying to build a better future here. But anyway, that aside, I'm getting off track. We're still talking about consumerism and censorship. So, and getting back to censorship, I am looking at the top 10 most challenged books of 2006, because the most challenged books of 2007 have not yet appeared, since we're still in 2007. But I just perused this list not too long ago. And it's interesting because the criticisms are very similar on almost all of these. And I don't think these criticisms are fair, but I'm going to read through some of them real quick anyway. And I don't think this is in any particular order, but I could be wrong. On this list we have And Tango Makes Three by Justin Richardson and Peter Parnell. Now, I'm not going to read the author's names, because, like, some of these names are kind of, like, hard, and I'm going to badly mispronounce them. So I'm just going to read the titles of the books and tell you why they have been challenged quite often. And the reasons this one, And Tango Makes Three, have been challenged is for homosexuality, anti-family, and unsuitable for age group. Now, I haven't read And Tango Makes Three, but I think if homosexuality is one of the reasons why this book should be banned, then I don't think it's a valid one. Anti-family, is that now, I think anti-family clarifies the homosexuality thing. It probably means, like, two guys have a kid or something, or two girls have a kid, and so that's anti-family now. So I think that would, but I could be wrong, because I haven't read the book, but I kind of think that's kind of crappy. So unsuitable for age group. I don't know what age group the book is marketed towards. I don't know what age group assigned the book for school. But in any case, I think the school should decide what age group is appropriate for what book, or more appropriately, each teacher should judge that. So, I don't know, that's my thought on that. And the next one on there is Gossip Girls, which is a series of books.
Yeah, and I think now they have a TV show on the CW, so how about that?
Yeah, so, and again, the criticism for this is homosexuality, sexual content, drugs, unsuitable for age group, and offensive language. Now, none of those things, I think, should be censored at all. So, you know, homosexuality, who cares? You know, we live in a world where there are gay people. I'm sorry, but it's true. There are gay people. You can't just lock them in a room and pretend they don't exist. And you can't just ban them from being in books. You can't just not have gays in movies, because then we'd have no movies, for one thing. But, I mean, it's ridiculous to try and shut the whole homosexual community out of the media or out of print, you know, in all possible ways. And sexual content, I know, now this I get on Christianity's butt about because, no pun intended there, but here's the thing. The only reason why America is sexually repressed and why sexual content is a problem is because Adam and Eve ate from a fruit of the knowledge of good and evil and were ashamed. That's it. That's the reason. Because there's nothing wrong with sexual content. There is nothing immoral about sexual content in and of itself. I mean, there are kinds of sexual content like cheating, for instance, which could be morally wrong. But my point is that sexual content in and of itself is not wrong. It's not morally wrong. The only reason why we, as American society, are uptight about this is because extreme Christians have propagated this idea so much that it is in the mainstream now, and that even non-Christians think that sexual content is offensive.
And talking about sex or discussing it in the form within some film, that's for any age.
Yeah, I don't see an issue there. And then drug use, okay, drugs are bad, okay. But the thing is, they're out there, and we should talk about them. And, you know, I have to agree with Nancy Reagan on this, just say no. You know, I'm sorry, but talking about drug use is actually a good thing. You know, talking about it doesn't necessarily promote it. In fact, it could discourage it. So I don't think that's a bad problem at all. And offensive language? Ah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I'm reminded of a soundbite given by John Waters on that film from last year, This Film Is Not Yet Rated, how his film, I forget the name of it now, was put an NC-17 rating was put on it because he talked about sex and how he observed that this phenomenon of granting an NC-17 rating for talking about sex is completely new to even him.
Yeah, it's pretty out there. Well, in that movie, by the way, which I did see, independent movie, now on DVD, by the way, you can order it on Amazon or anywhere else in bookstores now. Anyway, my point is, in this movie, they talk about how the MPAA, which rates the movies, they do it pretty much arbitrarily. Like, their membership is selectively picked, and usually they're all members in the Christian Coalition, and or many of them are, and they watch a movie, and then they arbitrarily decide what rating and they should get and why. And the reason, there is no objective code of standards for a movie, and oftentimes it differs from year to year. And, you know, I remember that many years ago, you know, maybe 10 years ago, R-rated movies had nudity. Today, you would be hard-pressed to find an R-rated movie that has nudity. If it's R-rated, it's usually for violence or language. You will not see a nude scene in it. And the funny thing is, there were some movies that I saw that people were like, oh my god, it's so, you know, explicitly sexual, and they didn't have nudity in it. I was like, why? Like, even the movie with Sylvester Stallone and Sharon Stone, The Assassin, had a nude scene in it. You know, I don't think it was Sharon Stone, but I could be wrong. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. But they all had, like, 5-minute nude scenes in it. Now, you know, nudity is outlawed in movies. It's just, they don't do it. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, just the right number of fucks can get you an NC-17. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's another thing. Well, anyway, other books on the list is Alice, the series. And that's on there for, again, sexual content and offensive language. Now, this title really, I think, is funny. The Earth, My Butt, and Other Things, and Other Big Round Things. That is on the most challenged banned book list here. And the reason for that is sexual content and anti-family, offensive language, unsuitable for age group. Again, there are all these things.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
Yeah, I think there is a big one. Next one, The Bluest Eye. This one, I will mention the author, Toni Morrison, because she's known as, like, this great author. Even though I was bored by her, I didn't read this book of hers. But, again, sexual content, offensive language, unsuitable for age group. Then here's the next one, Scary Stories. And this is a series. And here we have a new one to the list, Occult/Satanism. So now, if you talk about another religion, and for the record, there is a religion, Satanism. It's, you know, there are two sects of Satanism, and it is a bona fide religion in America, and that is so offensive to people to talk about this other religion that this book is put on the most challenged book list of 2006.
Yeah, I think the people challenging these books are themselves challenged.
I just think it's funny that Satanism, which really has nothing to do with Satan at all, is on this, you know, that's the reason given for banning this book, or attempting to ban this book in any case. This list isn't necessarily of banned books, but challenged books. So I just think that's funny, like, you know, and of course Harry Potter is a famous example, you know, because it talks about magic and wizardry and stuff. So that got enough religious right people in a tizzy. But I just think it's funny that while these books are being challenged, all of these reasons, you can tell, you can almost read through the line and see who might be objecting to it. What kind of people would be objecting to it? We don't see, you know, a story about Jesus being challenged here. You know, nobody's challenging the Bible, even though I find that very objectionable. I still think people should read it, though, because I think it's the number one cause of atheism, is reading the Bible brings people to atheism when people actually read it without the aid of a Bible study group telling them where to focus their reading, or a preacher telling them where to focus their reading. When people actually read it cover to cover, they usually go, wow, this is some wacky crap. Let's reject it because it's ridiculous. The next book going down this list here is Athletic Shorts. And again, it's homosexuality, offensive language. The next one is The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Again, homosexuality, sexually explicit, offensive language, unsuitable for age group. Again, you know, same objections to all these books. Beloved by Toni Morrison. Offensive language, sexual content, unsuitable for age group, and boring as hell. Oh, I'm sorry, that was my reason for putting it, because that one I actually read. Well, I tried to read, let me say, put it that way. But yeah, I mean, it's that one, Oprah liked that one, come on. Oprah was in the movie, wasn't she? You don't know? Oh, well, anyway, that one, The Chocolate War. How could The Chocolate War be offensive? I've never read it, but it's about chocolate and war. You know? But sexual content, offensive language, and violent. Oh, so we got a new one on the list, The Violence. First time that one makes the list of reasons why books are banned. That's surprising to me because, you know, we live in a pretty violent culture.
Yeah, and Fahrenheit 451, some of their objections were he did a page-by-page, the father in this story, did a page-by-page read. He was citing every instance of drinking, cigarette smoking, a guy getting slapped. I mean, by this guy's standards, every book, every TV show would all be banned.
I think he would prefer it that way. I think, you know, we're getting into this idea where, all right, let me backtrack a bit because my mind's working too fast here. One of the main problems I've always had with censorship is it's somebody reading a book and saying, I'm offended by this book, and while I'm morally pure enough to read this book and not be tainted by it, you're not. And therefore, you shouldn't be allowed to read this book. I'm morally virtuous enough that I can handle it, but you can't. So now nobody should be able to read it.
Yeah, and it goes back to this whole looking down on children as being these pure white snowflake innocents who can't possibly understand complexities of our modern world. And I think that's crap. I think kids, especially kids today, understand things at least a little bit better than we did when we were their age.
And that brings me to my other point in parenting, and I've talked about this before too. With parenting, it shifted. It used to be parenting was teaching your children about the world and help guiding them through it. Now parenting is sticking your children in a bubble and putting that bubble in a closet and locking the door. And I don't think that's the same kind of thing, because you will notice that people who are not guided through these things, when they are finally exposed to the world, and they will be, because the world exists, they don't know how to deal with it, and they go ballistic. And those tend to be the people who end up being serial killers, or just extremely violent, or don't know how to handle the world when it's confronted to them. But people who are guided through it tend to have a better handle on it. They know moderation is the key.
Yeah. And ironically, the right talks about the same thing. Bill O'Reilly is frequently saying that the left babies our children and does all this PC stuff that they shouldn't. But then he caters to his own politics, and yeah, he complains about homosexuality, and whenever homosexuality comes up in young children or with Christianity, he doesn't want people talking about Christianity, and he makes the argument that if it was Islam that was being criticized, people would be up in arms, but Christianity, the liberal left, feels the need to complain about it all the time and not have a problem.
So when you say he didn't want people talking about Christianity, you mean people criticizing Christianity, right?
Yeah, criticizing.
Yeah, I mean, you can talk about Christianity as long as you're brainwashing your kids to be Christians.
Yes, of course. As long as the brainwashing goes on, you can talk about it. But as soon as you have the golden compass, no, you can't do that. It's bad for the children.
Now, has Bill O'Reilly talked about the golden compass yet, or not yet to your knowledge?
Not yet to my knowledge, but I'm sure he has. I know Fox News has had Bill Donahue, I think his name is.
Yeah, from the Catholic League.
Yeah, and he's launching his whole campaign now on just the Golden Compass platform of why it's evil and will destroy our children and teach them to be dreary, melancholy, terribly sad people.
Yeah, and then this is what I found interesting. I went to Bill Donahue's website earlier today, actually, and I was looking at his stuff on the Golden Compass because he's published. The Catholic League has a, you know, some 20-page or something pamphlet about why the Golden Compass is evil, which they're selling, of course, for $5 a pop. And of course, if you buy more than 10, they'll sell it to you at a discount of $3 a pop. That way, you can distribute them. Now, this is what I find very funny: is that they like when movies like The Golden Compass come out, because here they're going to use this to raise money, which of course they don't pay taxes on. So they're going to raise money using The Golden Compass.
Yeah, it's the part of the evil, fear-based campaign. You know, find something to attack and then raise money to fight it.
Yeah, so it actually helps them to have these kinds of things. And that, I just find that weird and bizarre that they can do that, like, that, you know, they don't have to pay royalties on it. I really think, yeah, that when they do something like that, they should be held to, you know, it'd be one thing if they made these booklets and gave them out, that would be wrong enough, but okay, I mean, it's within their right to do that. But now they make these booklets and they're selling them, you know, for profit to help fund, you know, their campaign. And I just think that's kind of bizarre that they're doing that. It's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it was funny. We were talking earlier about the American Family Association and how we basically learn what we what to buy based on what they attack each week.
Well, yes and no. You know, they are against Mrs. Fields cookies, and I'm not buying Mrs. Fields cookies, mainly because I don't like them. I think they taste crappy, but that's my opinion, you know. But yeah,
that's your opinion, and it's wrong. Mrs. Fields' cookies are good.
I would have to disagree, but anyway, what I mean is, I guess, you know, the Catholic League has every right to sell their pamphlets and make a profit, but you know, it is kind of hypocritical, I think, in a weird way, that they're profiting off of the very thing that they're against. Or, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to structure that right. But it is kind of bizarre, and I don't know.
And could it be argued that, like, Narnia is promoting, like, magic in some sense that isn't specifically Jesus Christ in name?
I guess. I don't know. But, you know, who knows? They have different lines of reasoning for anything, you know. I bet you if Bill Pullman came out with the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, they would be against that, too.
Was it Bill Pullman?
Phil Pullman?
Yeah, I think it's Philip Pullman.
Well, in any case, my point is, it really depends on who the author is. For instance, if J.K. Rowling was a fundamentalist, wacky Christian, the religious right would have no problem with Harry Potter whatsoever. They would look for the Christian message in it, and they would use it as propaganda. But because J.K. Rowling is like maybe a liberal Christian or even secularized, I don't even know, now that book is evil. For instance, but it's not even enough to be Christian and have these books. You have to be their type of Christian. You have to be religious right Christian. For instance, Dan Brown, right? His book, his two books, I guess, Angels and Demons and, of course, The Da Vinci Code, he's taking a Christian perspective. He's just twisting it a little bit as maybe think about it this way. But because he's not the same Christian that they are, that book, you know, of course, that movie and that book are on their anti-list as well.
Yeah, and they complained about that book and how it was so way off about things. And sure, it's a mix, it's fiction. You know, it's a mixing up a lot of ideas together, no different than anything else in that genre. And, you know, they made this huge complaint, that's not the real Christianity, that's not true. And it's like, it's fiction.
And the thing is, we don't know the truth. Well, we don't know the truth 100%. For instance, there are stories now, and I was researching this online, that, you know, they take what Dan Brown's interpretation of the Jesus story was, that he lived in, or he married, had a kid, and died before his kid was, you know, crucified before his kid was born. Right, that was Dan Brown's version. But there are also versions where Jesus lived, raised the kid in France, and then there are stories, totally different stories, where Jesus lived and went to Asia, and there's a tomb in Asia where they're calling it Jesus' tomb. I'm not kidding you. I forget where this is. I think it's in, oh, I know, it's in the Kashmir, which is the heavily battled territory between Palestine and India. Not Palestine, Pakistan and India, right? There's a tomb there of a religious figure who they're claiming was Jesus. I'm not kidding you. This is, you know, you can go online and Google it. This is serious. Now, of course, for me, I'm pretty sure Jesus didn't actually exist. So I think it's all crap. But, you know, I'm just saying, you know, wait until they make that into a movie, which would be make a ton of money too, like Da Vinci Code, you know. You know, Jesus survived, you know, and wandered for 40 days and 40 nights and into Kashmir, you know. There's a whole thing on it.
I think it just shows that Christianity, whether it's one version or another, sells at the box office.
You know, it's not, let me explain, it's not Christianity that sells. I think people like mystery. They like mystery tied to real world in some sense. They like codes. They like conspiracy things. For instance, the Da Vinci Code, the reason why it did well was because he's trying to solve puzzles that were left centuries ago. You know, for instance, the movie National Treasure, same kind of thing. No religion involved. It's a secularized version of the Da Vinci Code. Plot is almost identical. It's just it's one secular, one's religious. You know, and they're coming out with a new National Treasure movie coming out pretty soon. I think next month. But my point is that people like this kind of thing, this kind of, you know, hidden secrets that were left centuries ago for us to find. And I often wonder, should we, like, start making, like, these codes embedded? You know, I'm going to put some codes in every episode of Dangerous Talk from now on. And that way, like, hundreds of years from now, people will have to piece together going from show to show, to the website, to the MySpace page, to the YouTube page, to find the hidden message of Dangerous Talk.
That sounds like a winning strategy.
I think it would be a great movie in 200 years.
Yeah, I think also, though, yeah, I think you're right that people like to, especially anything dealing with conspiracy theories and cults and secret societies, people are generally fascinated by that.
And it reminds me, because I did a blog on this the other day where, you know, there's a whole big thing now. A lot of the Ron Paul supporters are really big into the conspiracy theories with the Illuminati and the Freemasonry, and people are fascinated by that. So any movie that talks about the Illuminati or Freemasonry is going to do well, even though there is no Illuminati and the Freemasons are pretty much all but extinct at this point and losing members like crazy.
I'm working on the movie right now.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, it's just, there are things, themes that interest people in movies and in media, this kind of thing. And Christianity just happens to be able to hit on it because they have these mysteries of Christianity. We don't know anything about, or, well, we don't know as much. Let me rephrase this. Most people do not know much about early Christianity. And because of that, instead of actually going and researching early Christianity, they would rather speculate and make crap up because it's more entertaining. But really what they could do is just go onto Google and kind of Google it for a little bit, you know, early Christianity, and find out some information about it. And don't go to, like, the religious right Christian sites. Go to, like, really, you know, historically accurate sites.
Read some Bart Ehrman.
Yeah. I mean, Bart Ehrman's a great historian who talks about this stuff. Or Karen Armstrong's another one. She has a ton of books about this. You know, and there are plenty of other reputable historians who have accounts who can tell you more about early Christianity and how Christianity has evolved over the years, and even early Judaism and how that evolved and how that evolved to Christianity, and how Judaism evolved from a polytheistic religion to a monotheistic religion. And there's all kinds of things that you can research and find out, but instead, you know, it's just easier to be entertained by stories of, you know, hidden codes and blah, blah, blah. Now, personally, I thought The Da Vinci Code was an entertaining movie. Well, actually, more entertaining of a book. Kind of a dull movie, actually. But, you know, my point being that, you know, it's entertaining. You can, say, enjoy it in that sense, but realize that it's all crap. Like, when I watch National Treasure, you know, I'm big into history, and especially the early American history. And the first glaring thought that I had when I'm watching the movie National Treasure is they're hunting for this treasure of all this gold and silver that our founding fathers collected. Meanwhile, they're struggling to fund a war. And I'm thinking, if they had all this treasure, why wouldn't they have used that treasure to help them fund the war? So it's a glaring error in the movie, but you know what? Who cares? It's a fun movie. You know, and I can't wait to see the new one, even though I know it's totally implausible and complete crap. But it's at least fun.
Yeah, nobody goes to see Beowulf because they think it's going to be plausible.
Yeah, I guess. But the thing is, one of the things I find that's very different between the secular community, which I've been involved with, and the religious right community, and even the religious left to some extent, is that when a movie like The Passion of the Christ comes out, there aren't atheists protesting The Passion of the Christ. We might not see it, although I know a lot of atheists who did. But, you know, I personally didn't, and I'm not really interested in it because I knew from the start that it's just basically people beating on this dude, you know? So I didn't think that would be all that entertaining to me. But, you know, I did go and see Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. I wasn't picketing outside because it's stupid. But yet, I promise you that when Golden Compass comes out, you will see some religious right people picketing. You know, when Harry Potter came out in theaters, there were people picketing. You know, when, a lot of these movies, that, you know, Da Vinci Code.
And when Dogma came out, even Kevin Smith picketed.
That's right. When Dogma, which bashed, well, not bashed, it just made light of, you know, criticized Catholic dogma and even kind of gave a different spin on it, really. Religious right were out protesting that, and even Kevin Smith went and protested and got on the news. It was quite funny. And I remember I actually went to a sci-fi convention and Kevin Smith was speaking at, and he told that story, so it was kind of funny.
Yeah, I think he goes into a good amount of detail about it on the first Evening with Kevin Smith DVD.
I think so. But yeah, I mean, my point is that religious people tend to get all uptight. And I know a lot of people, well, not the religious left. Well, they don't care. They don't protest dogma. You're right, they don't. But when I did the Suck at Jesus challenge on YouTube, I can't tell you how many more religious left people criticized me for it than religious right. You know, I got both, actually, but more people from the religious left. You know, basically, I'm making light of the fact that people were offended by Kathy Griffin's speech, in which she was clearly making a joke about how famous people thank Jesus right before or after they shoot up cocaine and, you know, make songs about killing people. You know, and she's clearly making a joke about that. And, you know, people got offended, and from both the religious left and the religious right.
Yeah, and Sam Harris is famous for criticizing the religious left.
Yeah, and rightfully so, you know. And so I've kind of been on Sam Harris's side recently on that quite a bit. And it just seems to me that, you know, we in the secular world, we're not quite as easily offended. Our feathers aren't as ruffled as much. Meanwhile, you know, if you get the American Family Association emails, you'll notice that they get offended just because a store doesn't mention Christmas during the season. You know, for instance, Lowe's recently had holiday trees, and the American Family Association was offended that they weren't Christmas trees. So they complained so much and started a boycott, and Lowe's hardware store finally relented and said, oh, we're sorry, we'll rename them Christmas trees just for you. And, you know, that's very sad. You know, and the same thing, they had their Christmas and Mrs. Fields cookies because they had a holiday cookie section instead of a Christmas cookie section. You know, because they weren't mentioned by name, they're offended. You know, there's no secular cookie section. You know, no atheist is protesting Mrs. Fields for that. I just protest Mrs. Fields because they suck.
Again, Mrs. Fields cookies are good.
All right. Well, actually, I will say this. There is a business that I protest for their policy, and that is Chick-fil-A. I do boycott Chick-fil-A. They are a Christian group, a Christian restaurant chain. They are closed on Sunday, even though the actual Sabbath is Saturday. But my beef with them is that they refused to hire. They made a statement that they were not going to hire people who were tattooed or pierced in any way. And while I'm not tattooed or pierced, I was kind of a little bit offended that they would make that statement and kind of, you know, I want to stand up for tattooed and pierced people. So, and also in their Happy Meal one time, they, Happy Meal, I don't know if that's the right word, but they gave out C.S. Lewis books, and some of them were the Narnia Chronicles of Narnia, but they also put in Mere Christianity in one of them, and I thought that was kind of offensive to me, so I'm boycotting them for that. But, you know, it's just my boycott personally, and you dangerous talkers out there want to join me in that boycott, you're more than welcome to.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is that we tend to boycott things that when they're inclusive, when they're trying to stay with a fixed political side, or they have some sort of fixed thing that excludes people. Whereas these Christian organizations, they demand that it's all about Christianity and everybody else is excluded.
Yeah, I see what your point is. I don't know if you articulated it well, but I see what you're going at. You're saying, you know, like if they're not specifically included, they're boycotting, but or if they're including other people aside from them, they're boycotting. And I think that's a valid point. So, well, anyway, we're almost out of time here today. I'd like to thank you, Mike, for being part of the show today, and check out your MySpace 18 page at myspace.com/ what is it?
MySpace.com/atheist theme.
Okay, cool. And you also have a YouTube page now, right?
Yes, YouTube.com/atheist theme.
How convenient. Cool. And, you know, you send out bulletins a lot, and they're usually really good ones. So I know a lot of people will re-forward your bulletins. I get them all the time, too. So keep up the good work. But now it is announcement time. So first, if you want to contact the show at all, you can contact us through email at dangeroustalk@gmail.com. You can check out this show and many other shows on Dangerous Demand, and you can get to Dangerous Demand through our meme website, dangeroustalk.net, and you can also get Dangerous Demand through the MySpace page, myspace.com/dangeroustalk. You might, I think you can also get it through the A-Team MySpace page too, which is myspace.com/atheistteam. And you too can put a Dangerous Demand player on your MySpace page. There's instructions right underneath the player on the Dangerous Talk MySpace page. So feel free to do that. We also have a YouTube page, youtube.com/dangeroustalk. So feel free to check that out, comment on our videos, and, you know, if you want, make some video responses to our videos. It's fine too. The A-Team, you guys have a YouTube page also, which is the youtube.com/atheistteam as well. We also have a series of editorial columns, which I have not been good about updating. We got some new ones coming up. I know I recently wrote one. Sean McGonigal wrote a new Way of the Atheist. That will be up there shortly. And I think you over at the A-Team, Mike, you guys write A Modest Proposal. And I think you guys will probably have a new one pretty soon, too. We also have some competitions and projects going on. The competitions first, the Most Dangerous Song competition and the Most Dangerous Art competition. You can vote on those things, and they are both on the dangeroustalk.net main page. Just look over at the side for competitions. And we also have some projects, the Halloween Forever project and the Free Them for Freedom project. So you can take a look at those photo galleries. For the Freedom for Freedom, you have to be over 18. I can't enforce it, but we have a warning on there because of the laws. Personally, I don't really care if you look at them if you're under that, but the laws are the laws, and I have to uphold them even though I disagree with them. So, you know, your eyes might pop out of your sockets or something, but you can check that out. We also have a series of photo galleries, regular photo galleries, on dangeroustalk.net. All kinds of pictures from different events we go to the Rational Response Squad party, their housewarming party, pictures from there, and all kinds of other places. Spokesmodels. We have 3 spokesmodels, and their photos are in the photo galleries somewhere. Spokesmodel Sarah, spokesmodel Erin, and spokesmodel Jackie. So you can check them out. We also have a page devoted to the spokesmodels in the photo gallery of the MySpace page. So feel free to comment on that there. Let's see. Oh, we have the new campaign now, which is the No Confidence campaign. You can print out a No Confidence poster and try to help us impeach Dick Cheney. Recently, we went to Congressman Joe Sestak's environmental talk, and we were handing out no confidence posters there in conjunction with the unofficial MoveOn.org people, and we were trying to get the congressman to speak about impeachment since he voted to table it, and he is a Democratic congressman. He did actually respond. One of the MoveOn people, a good friend of the show, Fernando, he questioned Sestak on that, and Sestak did respond. So, you know, we are making some noise here, and we are doing some work. And we need dangerous talkers like Fernando and dangerous talkers like you guys out there to keep banging the drums. We got to get these people impeached. We got to do all that stuff. And it starts with, you know, helping out and trying to build movements. And that's what we're all about. Speaking of movements, we're, of course, friends with the Rational Response Squad, who has given us forum space on their forums. So you can check that out and comment on Dangerous Talk or anything that we're up to through there if you like. I've been doing daily blogs on the MySpace page. You can check that out also and comment on those things there. We at Dangerous Talk feel that we need talkers like you out there and helping us out and, you know, giving us feedback, giving us your opinions, you know, and fighting the good fight, you know. We're all in this together. And our other good friends, freethoughtforums.org, check out their website. They have some news stories and columns, and they also do a live chat every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So join in and see what's going on there. We also have a charity event that we put together here at Dangerous Talk. It is Atheists for Autism Research. You can find out more about that through dangeroustalk.net, clicking on the Atheists for Autism Research page. And please donate in the name of atheism to a great cause, autism research, which is a very scientific cause, which is why I think it is very important for our community to get behind that. And we are making a great deal of strides in that area of science, and they certainly need funding. The Atheists for Autism Research charity is through Autism Speaks, so Dangerous Talk does not see any of the money. It goes right to Autism Speaks, and you can find out right where that money goes to through autismspeaks.org, and check them out. We also have the Dangerous Store, where we have our t-shirts and other stuff on there, so please, you know, spread the word, be talkers too. Get a Dangerous Talk t-shirt, wear it around to different events. You can also get an Atheists for Autism Research shirt through the Atheists for Autism Research page. There's a link to the Cafe Press site, so you can get those. And the Atheists for Autism Research shirts, those are at cost. Dangerous Talk makes nothing off of that. That's purely Cafe Press cost price. So that way we can get, you know, for different autism walk events. You can donate to the show. We don't make any money. We operate at a loss. Right now I'm asking you not to donate money. It's the religious groups that try to beg you for money and try to snag your last dollar. We're not going to do that. Instead of, we have that if you want to, but instead of donating to the show, donate to Atheists for Autism Research or donate to the Dennis Kucinich for president campaign. Right now, those are two much more worthwhile causes than this show. And you won't hear religious people saying that. Instead, they'll steal your last dime and say, oh, you shouldn't have. That's not our style. It's not the way we operate. Anyway, talkers, be dangerous and keep up the fight. Keep up the good work. See you next time.
I am a terrorist. Words are my tools, my weapons. Through them, my thoughts vibrate around your synapses. They infiltrate your mind. They invade your soul. You are the victim of my speech, a casualty of my dangerous talk.